Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
Listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
And we are live here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is Fantasy Sports Today. I'm Kevin Walsh. Alongside me today is George Kurtz as we get ready for the next 3 hours to preview the NFC East. Before we get to that, George, how are we doing?
Oh, I got to tell you, Kev, I'm doing great. You want to know why I'm doing great?
Please do tell.
See, I'll tell you why. Because yesterday I was able to finalize my home league's draft date. Mm. This is like the hardest thing I will do all year, trying to get 11 guys to come together to agree on a date to do a draft. Like, they don't know what's coming. Like, this is not a league that's been around for 30 years with pretty much the same guys over and over again. They're all shocked. Oh, my God, we got to set up a draft date. But it's all set. Draft date set. Keep it data set. I'm a happy guy.
When's the date? When's the big day?
August 20th.
Beautiful. Great date. Great date, August 20th. Yeah, that's the time that we're getting. Trying to figure out draft dates now.
It's truly, I'm not kidding. It's not a joke. Setting up a draft date is impossible. You get guys, oh, I can't do a draft date this day because I got to rearrange my underwear drawer. You know, I got to fold my socks that night. It just, it's like they find any excuse. It's like, don't you want a draft? You know, shouldn't you be making life easier? You know, it's in my mind, it's like Christmas morning for adults. We all get together with all the guys and you have a draft. It's a fun night. It shouldn't be like pulling teeth.
Yeah, I'm excited to get to the draft. I've been communicating with some people from some of the home leagues trying to figure it out. I've been trying to convince some people to start a keeper draft, but people are like, oh, I could never possibly keep up with four leagues. I'm like, are you kidding me? What are we doing? Like, some please. I want to start a dynasty league, but no one is interested. I'm trying some things, George. I'm not getting the responses back that I need from these people.
I think usually, and like I said, my home league, it is 30 years. It didn't start as a keeper league. Things evolved, you know, yeah. And that's probably the easiest way. You start off slow. I mean, this league, it's a two-quarterback league. I should say it's a super flex league. It has some weird rules, but it didn't always start out where it grows. People have voted in new rules. I mean, I'd like to get IDP in there. Mm. I'd like to get rid of kickers. I'd like to get rid of defense and get to IDP. But I know trying to get that will be impossible because not everybody's you know, you got different levels of expertise in this league. Some people are very good. Some are not. Some play more recreationally. So IDP would be next to impossible. But that's the way it works. I mean, you take it slow by slow. We didn't start as a keeper league. Now it is a keeper league. Dynasty league, that would probably have to be started from scratch.
Yeah, I just told the group, I was like, we need to get rid of kickers this year. Because this is kind of, you know, when you're here at the network and you hear everyone talk about it, it's like, yeah, we need to get rid of kickers. I'm all into that. I'm kind of starting to get all in on getting rid of defenses. And I messaged them. I said, we need to get rid of kickers. I kind of feel the same way about defense, but I think you guys would kick me out of the league if I really pushed for that. But we need to get rid of kickers. And it's people like, no, we need kickers. And it's like, why? Like, what? There's no strategy in this kicker stuff. I remember Greg Zuerlein last year was one of the most highly owned guys on all playoff teams last year. Like, that's not how that should be going. We don't need that. That's not really what I think fantasy football is about, is whether you somehow stole Greg Zuerlein.
You see, for me, it's this simple. Whenever we tell you, whenever anybody asks for a question, advice, and we tell you, well, just wait till round 15, just wait till round 16, then something needs to change. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're telling you don't take a kicker till round 16, don't take a defense till round 15, don't take a quarterback till round 8 or round 9, something needs to change. In my mind, that's why superflex leagues or two quarterback leagues are the ways to go. I prefer superflex over two quarterbacks. I think getting rid of defenses, get rid of kickers, go with extra flex players. It just adds more strategy. It makes it a better league. As far as IDP is concerned, you know, I play in the biggest IDP league I play in is we actually start 11 defensive players. No one's saying you got to do that. You could start slow.
Yeah.
Drift one defensive lineman, one linebacker, one secondary player. Everybody will have an all-star. Okay? You start slow like that. That's how you learn, and you work from there where you maybe the 2 years down the line or 3 years or next year, whatever it might be, you add extra players to make it more strategic. But it'll make the game more fun. You know, it's like, you know, most of us play fantasy baseball. Are we not including pitchers? No, we do include them. So why not include defensive players in football?
That's not a bad point. So what we're going to do here today is we're going to preview the NFC East. And when I say preview, listen, you're going to get predictions and you're going to get our outlook. But I think today we're also going to try and present a lot of questions that will surround this division. Part of the thinking for that is we just started training camp. And if you ask the Chargers, things can change drastically from the beginning of training camp to even week two of the preseason. They just lost a starting corner in Jason Verrett for this season. They've already lost Hunter Henry. That's a whole Chargers problem. So you will get some exact predictions, but I think today it's to really try and get a grasp on the main questions that can surround this division. And it's a very interesting division. I think that you can make a case for a number of outcomes here. You've got the reigning Super Bowl champion, Philadelphia Eagles, coming off, obviously, the best season that they've ever had in their franchise's history. The Dallas Cowboys had a tumultuous season. I think you could say Tyrone Smith missed time. Ezekiel Elliott finally then got suspended 6 games, and that pretty much blew up their entire season. There's now a lot more questions about Dak than there were after what was a fantastic rookie season. The Redskins, the big things, obviously, Kirk Cousins gone, Alex Smith in, so that is a big thing for them. And then the Giants, all of those injuries, a horrible season, Ben McAdoo gone, they ended up 3-13. They bring in Saquon Barkley, so there's a lot of interesting storylines within this division. One of the most interesting divisions, I think, within all of football here. And before we get into individual teams, just George, your outlook kind of right now, or something that really is grabbing your attention within the NFC East?
Well, you mentioned we can always go to each team to grab a top headline. I mean, I'm a Cowboy fan, so I'm wondering, well, who the hell is Dak going to throw the ball to? Now, you lose Dez, you know, you let him go. Jason Witten retires. There's, I mean, your average, even your above average fan, more than likely, cannot name the Dallas starting tight end right now. Just Jeff Swaim. Yeah, and that's he's right now. I have no idea if he'll be starting since week one. But that's how bad it's been for the Cowboys as far as tight ends are concerned. They don't have anybody. You know, I think Witten's retirement did catch them off guard. Dez leaving, and Dez pretty much, lit the Cowboys on fire last night on Twitter, for anybody who wasn't following. Lit Sean Lee, Travis Frederick, Stephen Jones, pretty much just torching the whole Cowboy organization. Some of what he said is true. Some of it's just sour grapes. But so it's been an interesting couple of days in Dallas Cowboyland. Not to mention Jerry Jones mouthing off about the protesters, the kneeling for the national anthem, mouthing off about that is certainly not helping matters either.
Well, you know, let me ask you quickly about that point. And again, this is going to be an issue that because of the NFL and the way they've handled it, this is not going away. It's going to be a part of this season, but right now it's a main topic, I think, for the Dallas Cowboys because Jerry Jones said that they are going to stand for the national anthem. It seems that the players are supportive of it. I know Zeke had a comment where he seemed to be okay with it. I think Dak said something of this is not the time to address it. I think at the beginning of last year, the Steelers maybe were the team that struggled with this the most, the Charlie Villanueva situation, and I think it kind of cost them a bit in the beginning of the season. Is there concern in this impacting the Cowboys season in any way?
I mean, it could. You don't know what's going on in that locker room about how the players feel about this. You never know. Dak and Ezekiel Elliott pretty much come out and, I don't want to say supported Jones, but said they won't, you know, they have no problem with the policy. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it makes you wonder if Jerry Jones, if he was smart, he talked to his players first. Yeah, you know, before he made these statements, you know, whether he did that or not, no way of knowing. I'd be kept behind closed doors. We don't know. You did hear Malcolm Jenkins of the Philadelphia Eagles yesterday pretty much come out and say, you know, that Jerry Jones is a bully, da-da-da-da. He probably shouldn't be saying it because he doesn't know either what's going on in the Cowboys locker room there. In my mind, you know, the owners, I doubt very much that these 32 owners really care one way or the other if these players protest or not. What they care about is money. Money, 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 money. And the protests are causing costing them money because the sponsors are mouthing off to them. That's where all this comes from. If they weren't losing a dime from this, it's a PR hit. It's annoying, but it would go away. You know, but the fact that the sponsor being pulled because they're upset about this, you know, whether or not you're upset about it or not, doesn't matter. If the sponsors are, there's the money, and money talks. That's all the NFL is about, is money. It's money, money, money. That's all they care about. You know, so that's where this all comes from here. And I know Jerry Jones, Cowboys are one of the teams where the sponsors have mouthed off about they don't like this. So therefore, this forces the owners, or owner in this case, Jerry Jones, to take action. The NFL has screwed this up since day one. I mean, they really have. You know, I think I talked about this with Corey Parson last week. Personally, I have no problem with the kneeling. We kneel in church. Right, and when that's, you know, if you, whatever religion you are, that's your paying whole, you know, difference to Almighty God. We kneel there, it's okay, but you can't kneel for the national anthem? That doesn't really make sense to me, so I have no problem with that. You know, I come from a military family, so it doesn't bother me. Sitting down, yeah, I don't like that optic. I don't think you should be sitting down during the national anthem. That to me shouldn't happen. But kneeling or with your fist in the air doesn't bother me in the least. It truly does. If that's your way of protesting, trying to bring what probably should be a just cause for what the original one was, I don't have a problem with that. But the NFL screwed this up. So they made this such a bigger story than it really ever should have been.
Well, I mean, to that point, I could not agree more. The NFL has butchered this pretty much at every single opportunity that they've had. And I do think that this is something I support the players in this. I think that what they are doing is very noble. I think that it is quite a shame. And not only Colin Kaepernick, but also Eric Reed is not within the NFL right now because of this situation. I do think that the protests have certainly evolved. It began as something that was about police brutality, and then it has evolved into a number of things. I think there were protests against Donald Trump. There were protests then just against the league as a whole. I mean, at one point, Jerry Jones did take a knee. Like, that needs to be acknowledged here. This is something that has evolved. In terms of how it could impact Dallas, I think what you said there is a key question, and one we probably won't get the answer to, but did Jerry speak to his players before he made this decision? If I had to guess, I would likely bet no, because I don't think that Jerry Jones is really going to run this by many people. I think that Jerry kind of worries about what Jerry thinks, but perhaps he did. But I think that is important because, you know, these side projects can derail a season. And people might try to say, well, that's why you don't need to kneel. Well, that's why Jerry doesn't need to then put in some type of policy. You see how that works for both sides, because those type of side discussions can create problems. It happened last year with Pittsburgh. Not an apples-to-apples situation, but I think Baltimore, a team that's going to be talked about a lot this season, with the Joe Flacco or Lamar Jackson conversation, the longer that carries on, I think that it could get worse for the Ravens this season. So those side project discussions can be problematic in terms of causing chaos that they just don't necessarily need, and that is aided by Jerry Jones coming out with a hard line stance on it. Now, again, the rest of this division remains incredibly interesting. You do have the defending Super Bowl champion, Philadelphia Eagles. George mentioned he's a Cowboys fan. I'm an Eagles fan. I think you will find throughout this show, we're not going to be doing this from a buy standpoint. No one is going to be projecting 16-0 from either team, but I will allow you to be the judge of that, the listener, as you continue. But for the Philadelphia Eagles, I would think, George, the biggest question has to be the health of Carson Wentz, no?
Sure. Now, he did a lot of damage to his knee. He did worse than just tearing the ACL. I said, I've torn my ACL, okay? And I'm not a professional athlete. I didn't have the best care on the planet. I had good care, don't get me wrong, but I didn't have professionals with me every step of the way making sure that I was going to recover. And it always, you know, I'm like, wow, you know, I tore my ACL. I had surgery September 30th. I was ready to go by May. Where I was allowed to play contact sports again. And I did. Yeah, you're certainly not the same player right away, but you are within 2 years, like they said. Carson Wentz had plenty of time to get ready. But then you hear they're all worried. So you knew he did worse damage than that. And he did. He ended up tearing two ligaments. That's why it's taken so long. But he's already behind center in 11-on-11 drills? I'm not worried about Carson Wentz. I'm not. All right? I'm not. If I was drafting today, Kev, I'm drafting Carson Wentz how I normally would. I don't draft quarterbacks early, so it doesn't matter to me. I probably won't get him in a lot of leagues. Yeah. But if I'm drafting today, if I have my draft tonight, and I love Carson Wentz, then if I want to grab him in round six, you go right ahead. Hey, you can always get Nick Foles later anyway to cover yourself just in case.
Sure.
You know, and then that's not a big deal. But I think Carson Wentz is going to be just fine.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think that Carson Wentz is going to be ready to go. Week one, it's just that's what he seems to be angling towards. He is way further ahead, I think, than what people projected. Perhaps he is pushing it. But one of the things that I think is good for the Eagles, because the backup is the reigning Super Bowl MVP, I don't think that they would take an unnecessary risk. As much as their opening game is a tough one against the Atlanta Falcons, a team that a lot of people are very high on, with good reason coming into this season. And we're actually going to do our NFC South preview tomorrow, George and I. As much as that looks like it could be a very difficult game, they can still feel confident enough in Nick Foles because, again, that's the reigning Super Bowl MVP. You can call it a fluke or not. That's what he is. There's a reason that he stayed, and the reason that the team kept him around was for this exact situation. So maybe you don't get Carson Wentz the first week, maybe the first 2 weeks, and that would, I think, impact how you would draft. But I think in terms of the projection for this team as a whole, they can still feel pretty good about themselves, regardless who's under center, perhaps, for those first 2 weeks. Again, we're coming up again to our first break. We come back, we're going to talk about the Washington Redskins there. I have one big question that I want to ask George to start that segment that I'm not sure how many people have maybe connected those dots. Maybe they have, and I've just missed it, but there's something there that lies within the Redskins that perhaps could speak to the step back that they took last season. So we're doing NFC East preview here on Fantasy Sports Today, 10 o'clock. We've got Emory Hunt, who's going to join us from Giants training camp. He's been there. We get to talk Saquon Barkley. Again, we're going through the NFC East here today for all 3 hours, or at least as long as it takes here on Fantasy Sports Today. So we come back, we're going to start the Washington Redskins preview. Keep it here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz here on Fantasy Sports Today. NFC East preview, Giants, Redskins, Cowboys, and Eagles. We're going to talk about all four teams throughout the next 3 hours. I want to start with Washington, George. And as I was kind of getting ready for today's program, there was something that it just jumped out to me and it just hit me. And maybe this is something that people have talked about at length, so excuse me if I'm just kind of bringing something to the table that has already been discussed at length here. But one of the main stories from last season were the LA Rams. And, of course, Sean McVay coming in and saving the career of Jared Goff that Jeff Fisher almost ruined. And them kind of going from the worst offense in football to the best offense in football, got the absolute best out of Todd Gurley. And Sean McVay won Coach of the Year. And one of the things I don't know if we perhaps connected the dots enough to, I don't know if we made enough fuss out of the fact that Washington lost Sean McVay. We, you know, I know last year when Atlanta lost Kyle Shanahan, because Shanahan was so much on the map for the success that that team had in getting to the Super Bowl coming into last season. I know at least myself, I was lower on the Falcons because I thought that that was going to be a big loss, but I didn't hear a lot of that for Washington. And you look, Football Outsiders, they have DVOA offensively. In 2016, Sean McVay's last season there, they were fifth in offensive DVOA. Last year without him, they dropped to 20th. So George, do you think that that was something that can kind of speak to a drop-off for this team, was losing the what was last year's coach of the year?
A little bit. I think the problem with Washington is pretty much simple. From last year's team, the wide receiving core was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Terrell Pryor was their big offseason acquisition. He didn't pan out whatsoever. He ended up being a disaster. Crowder was okay. Doxson up and down. Jordan Reed can't stay healthy again. And you had no running game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at that, to me, that's all their problems. I don't know if North Turner, I don't know if could have made this team much better than what it actually was. As much as I like Kirk Cousins. I like Kirk Cousins, but I also think he was protecting his big payday. And what I mean by that is, I don't think he was throwing too many contested balls. Mm. And you may think, oh, you shouldn't throw contested balls anyway. Well, that's not true. Sometimes you have to put up 50-50 balls. You just have to. You have to take a chance in the NFL to move the ball. But I don't think he was doing that because he didn't want to see that interception reach the 14-16 range and not get the big payday. So I think he was doing that at times. So that's why I think Cousins will be even a really good quarterback now because he's not worried about that anymore. But that doesn't matter for Washington. They have Alex Smith. And Smith gets a bad rap, right? He does. Game manager. He doesn't take chances. They'll bring out the stats that he was the best deep passer in the league last year. Listen, stats can say anything you want them to say. We know he's not that. But he does take more chances than you think. But last year he had Tyreek Hill. Who does he have this year? Doxson? Okay, he's already banged up. Richardson? All right, he's done some deep damage here. This team, in my mind, Kev, is all about Darius Geis. Can he give them a legitimate rushing attack?
Mm.
And I think that'll determine the fate of the Washington Redskins this season.
I think that's a great point that you make. As much as losing Sean McVay hurt, that wasn't the only loss for this team. The receiving core really, really struggled. And then they dealt with some injuries. The Terrell Pryor situation was a mess. I mean, people were so high on Terrell Pryor. And I understood it. I did. I wasn't necessarily drafting him myself in a lot of spots because I was a little worried, but I can't even remotely pretend to think that I saw anything like that coming. I mean, this was a guy that caught, I think, 1,000 yards in Cleveland, going to a legit situation with Kirk Cousins, a solidified quarterback, was supposed to be their number one wide receiver, and did he even catch 10 passes last year? It was, really was, one of the most unique messes I really can remember.
He was a colossal bust. I mean, a colossal. It just didn't work out. He got hurt. He was benched. He wasn't. It was just a disaster. A complete disaster. Which, hey, good luck to you, New York Jets. Maybe you'll get something out of him. Maybe you won't. But I have hope for Washington this season, except for this. During the commercial break, I said, let me look at Washington's schedule here. Because I think it's always important to get off to a good start. When you mentioned Jerry Jones. And then what the Cowboys, what he said, he's mouthing one of the players, will there be locker room problems?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you get off to it, if you win, winning solves everything, right? There'll be no locker room problems if you start winning. You start off 4-1, 5-1, 6-2, hey, everybody loves you. And then you start off 2-6, all of a sudden, oh, I can't believe the owner said that. Things fester up here. So when you look at Washington, man, you like their first two games at Arizona, Indianapolis. I'm not really knocking those two teams, but hey, you'll take that for a start. But after that, Kev, I mean, the next 14 games, they don't have a gimme. No, there's really no game in the division is ever a gimme in the NFC East. They'll all kill each other. They got to play Green Bay, at New Orleans, Carolina, Dallas, Giants, Atlanta, at Tampa. Jameis Winston will be back by then. They should be a decent squad. Houston, Dallas, Philadelphia, New York, at Jacksonville, at Tennessee, and they finish up in Philadelphia. Where are the wins there? I mean, outside of the Arizona, Indianapolis, where are the games you can go, Washington's going to win this game, no doubt. I'm not saying they're going to go 2-14, so I don't want to hear that. But wow, that 14 game stretch is really, really difficult.
Can you do me on a quick side note? Last week we were finishing up on a Sunday, and I had Corey tell me that the Redskins were going to win this division, and he pointed to the Eagles struggling because of schedule. And I at the time did not have this in front of me, but I mean, we're talking about schedules here. Listen, the whole NFC really does have a difficult schedule this year because a lot of these teams are projected to be at the minimum solid. But to what you just said right there, one of the things that I've been using as we've been doing these previews is an article that was written back in May by Warren Sharp about strength of schedule, kind of just using the projections. Again, it's not as much on last year's win totals, but this year's projected win totals. They start the year, as you mentioned, with the Cardinals and the Colts, who could be better, but they are projected to be some of the lower level teams in this league. And then in the article, it says from weeks 3 to 17, the remainder of their schedule, it's the toughest in all of football. So I think that those first two games, and it's tough to say, could sound like hyperbole, but they very well could be in a situation where where week one and week two are must win for the Washington Redskins. And that's a very difficult position to be in.
It is. It is. And you actually said it earlier. The NFC is a nightmare. There are great teams and there are good teams. There aren't too many bad teams in the NFC. So it's going to be tough for any team there. But Washington, I don't know if I want to say week one and week two are must wins, but I get the point. Because if they start 0-2, they're done. They can start looking forward to 2019. I mean, they're not going to recover from that. I don't think it's going to take more than 10 wins to win the NFC East. The problem is that schedule you just pointed out. You look at Philadelphia's schedule. I guess where the point's coming from. Atlanta, Tampa, Indianapolis. That's a tough threesome against Indianapolis. Tennessee, they play Minnesota. They got to play Carolina, Jacksonville, New Orleans. I mean, these are tough games here. They got to play the Rams, Houston. All these out of division games are not easy. The only gimme that the Eagles have is Indianapolis. Don't give me, like, so once again, I have the Eagles winning the division. I'll let that out. Mm-hmm. But I guess gimme against Tampa Bay in week two without Jameis Winston as well. So I think the Eagles are the best team in the division, mainly because, man, they're roster, they have depth there. They can afford, they can have an injury at almost any position, and they'll be okay. They'll be okay. Their weakest link is the secondary. You know, yes, they'd get crushed. They had some injuries there, but wide receiver, they have depth. Running back, they have depth. Quarterback, they have depth. Tight end, they have depth. Mm. And defense, they're all loaded with depth as far as the front seven's concerned. So that's why I have them. But my guess is if we look at schedules for each team, we're going to see the same thing, that it's just impossible in the NFCs because you're not going to have any gimme games. Philadelphia's schedule's technically a little tougher because they get the first place schedule. But I think Washington, didn't they finish last? So they have the last place schedule. We just saw that. That's not any easier.
Well, that's one of the things. I actually have it based on, again, those rankings. Three of those four teams have top 10 toughest schedules in football, with the Giants having one of the five toughest schedules in football. The only team would be the Cowboys, and they're just outside of that top 10. Now, again, the big thing for the Redskins, right, is Kirk Cousins to Alex Smith. Now, last year, the numbers were comparable in terms of totals. The yards were close, touchdowns, Kirk threw 27, and Alex Smith threw 26. The interceptions were different, Cousins threw 13, Alex Smith just 5. And Alex Smith, listen, we can make all the jokes in the world about him. He was a legitimate MVP candidate halfway through the year. Very legitimate MVP candidate halfway through the season. And that Chiefs team was clicking. But when it wasn't, all of a sudden, things dropped. And I just made the point about the Redskins losing Sean McVay. I do have questions now about where Alex Smith is going. I don't know if Andy Reid is going to still be Andy Reid last year because, again, the way they just kind of hit that brick wall was scary. But he is certainly still one of the better head coaches in football. And I think he's done a lot of good for Alex Smith. And if you look at the talent as well around Alex Smith there, I mean, listen, you can maybe try and make the argument that Jordan Reed is on Travis Kelce's level, but not when you only get half a season of Jordan Reed. Wide receiver core there, they don't have a Tyreek Hill, as you mentioned, here in Washington. Maybe the offensive line is a little bit better. But I have that type of question in terms of Alex Smith. Is he now going to take a hit going from a better system, a better coaching situation now here to Washington? So that's probably going to be the biggest question to answer. So, George, your feelings on Alex Smith coming into this year for Washington?
You know, I agree with everything you said. Plus, let's throw in the fact that he's going to a different offense.
Yeah.
Different receiver. He has to learn all these guys. These guys have to learn him. Chemistry. We've seen this before over and over again throughout the NFL. It may take three games, a month, before these guys really get in tune. I always wonder this. How will Coach Gruden handle Smith during the preseason? You know, normally, a veteran quarterback, he'd barely play. But maybe you want to see him in live action there, get more reps in with the first-team offense. And you wonder that. You know, that's something they're going to have to think about. They're going to have to manage very carefully because, you know, Washington can't wait until, you know, week four before, okay, everything's now pristine with Smith on the receivers. The chemistry is good, if it's ever going to be. You know, they can't wait that long. You know, so like I said, I think Smith, quarterback-wise, is fine. You know, fantasy-wise, I mean, I'll tell the story. I was in Vegas last week, and I was in Vegas with RotoWire, and RotoWire had a draft with RotoWire. And these are all, everybody works in the industry, you know, Pete Shankey, Tim Schuler, Jeff Erickson, Chris Bliss, all those guys. And I mean, I wait on a quarterback. Anybody reads anything I write or listen to me, I always wait on a quarterback unless it's a two-quarterback league. And this is your standard league, one quarterback, and I'm waiting on a quarterback. And Chris Liss is the only other guy in this league who's also waiting on a quarterback. And we're in about round 10, and there are 5-6 quarterbacks left. So I'm not worried. I'm going to get a quarterback. Round 10, I have the maybe it's round 11. I have the fifth pick overall, so I have pick 5. I decide not to take quarterback because there are 5 or 6 left, and I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's everybody and their mother now is starting to take a backup quarterback, which is shocking to me in an industry league. It was really caught off guard here that people would do this. You know, Luck goes off the board, Roethlisberger, Rivers. These are all guys who are left who I would have been very happy with. It comes down to Chris Liss is picking before me. Like I said, he waited on a quarterback, so it's round 11 now. I know he's taking a quarterback.
Right.
There's only one quarterback left that I had ranked as a quarterback one, and that's Matt Ryan. You know, and Chris, rather than have a list, he has the stickers, the CBS stickers. And I see him going far. I'm like, Christ, he's going deeper in the alphabet. And I'm like, as soon as I know that, he's taking Matt Ryan. I know that, and he does. Mm-hmm. And I'm stuck now. I'm stuck, and I ended up taking Alex Smith as my quarterback one. Not happy about that for the reasons that we all just mentioned here. It's not so much on Alex Smith about his reputation that I'm worried about fantasy-wise. It's everything else we just mentioned here. You know, the chemistry, the schedule's tough. You know, is he going to be in tune with these guys? Are they going to throw the ball a lot? Mm-hmm. You know, are they going to try and be a team that, you know, they have a rookie running back in Darius Geis? Are they going to try and run the ball a lot? You know, can anyone stay healthy on this team? You already said about Jordan Reed. Jordan Reed's a fantastic tight end, but he can't stay on the field at all. At all. You know, Jameson Crowder, so-so. Jockton's already banged up. We heard about that this week. Where's the passing offense coming from here? And that's my concern here. Where is the passing offense coming from? That's why, in my mind, for this team, it's all about Geis. If he can give them a legitimate rushing attack, man, that will make life so much easier for Smith in this passing offense.
Alex Smith right now, according to Fantasy Pros ADPs, is the 20th quarterback off the board. The three guys going just ahead of him, 17 is Dak, 18 is Derek Carr, and 19 is Marcus Mariota. For me, I take Alex Smith over both Dak and Derek Carr. I feel a little bit more comfortable, I think, with Alex Smith and those two guys. I think Mariota could be in for a really nice season, so I would take still Mariota there. A couple of other names perhaps that people could be unsure of is Jared Goff is the 14th, again, on Fantasy Pros, and Pat Mahomes is 15th. Any of those guys that I just mentioned there, do you think you would rather have Alex Smith than, say, Goff, Mahomes, Prescott, Carr, or Mariota?
Well, in the league I was just mentioning, every one of those quarterbacks was gone with the exception of Dak and Carr.
Okay.
You know, I could have taken Dak, and I already said this. I'm worried about the Dallas Cowboy passing game. I just don't see it, so I wasn't going to go Dak there. Carr I thought about, but, man, he regressed pretty much last year, right?
Yeah.
And he didn't look good at all. Gruden, the other Gruden there now. Maybe it works out. He is a quarterback whisperer guru. Maybe it works out. Maybe it doesn't. But for me, with Oakland, we don't know about Martavis Bryant. Is he going to get suspended? Is he not going to get suspended? Jordy Nelson, I don't know how much left he has. Amari Cooper can't catch the ball. Too many question marks there. So I stayed away from Carr. That's why I ended up going with Alex Smith. I didn't like any of those guys, and I was definitely taking one as a backup. You know, even though I don't like taking a backup quarterback, because so many people in this league were, and because I felt Alex Smith, well, I might want to play the quarterback roulette game each week. Unfortunately, by the time I went again, like I said, this league went quarterback crazy, and I ended up, my backup ended up being Eli Manning. So it's funny how NFC East preview, my two quarterbacks in that league are both from the NFC East.
That was just you making sure that we had content for the show. That's so.
Yeah, I'm good like that.
I think one of the things that is interesting for Alex Smith is he's coming off his best season of his career, no doubt about it. Best interception percentage of his career. Tied for the fewest interceptions that he has thrown in a game where he started 16 seasons. Most touchdowns he's ever thrown in his career. And the first time he's ever been at 4,000 yards. So that is a little bit of a concern for me with Alex Smith, if we're talking fantasy. And even if we're, again, we're talking both fantasy and, you know, projecting what type of they can do wins and loss wise here. Is there going to be regression for Alex Smith? That was the best version of Alex Smith that we saw last year. He now goes to a situation that I don't know if they're as talented skill position wise. The offensive lines are comparable, and I think Andy Reid has a higher reputation in terms of what he gets out of his quarterbacks currently than a Jay Gruden would. And I do think that we can have legitimate questions about Gruden in a way because of the drop-off that they took last year with Sean McVay. So Alex Smith is going to be the biggest question for this team because this is football. If the quarterback is good, then you should be good in most situations. We come back. We're going to continue talking Redskins, get to the skill positions. As you've heard from George, Darius Geis is the big name here. There's also some interesting wide receivers. Chris Thompson coming back here. We're also going to look a little bit at the defensive side of the ball there for the Washington Redskins. So keep it here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The NFC East preview is rolling.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And when you want to win your fantasy football league, you simply must go to the very best source of information that you can find. And of course, that is rotoexperts.com, where you can find Jake Seeley, because that is an undisputable fact. No other fantasy football analyst in the industry is a better player ranker and accuracy expert than the All-In Kid. In 2017, Jake Seeley was the number one draft accuracy ranker in the entire industry, as verified by FantasyPros.com, and has been a consistent top three ranker throughout his distinguished career. So if you want the best, go with the best. Get Jake Seeley's 2018 fantasy football rankings now in the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Enter promo code Winner, W-I-N-N-E-R, at checkout for a special discount. The Fantasy Edge exclusive package, always terrific. You can also find George's content over there as well. We're moving along right here with the NFC East preview, still talking a little bit of Redskins. And George, you mentioned Darius Geis a lot here, and I think with good reason, that he really could be the guy that turns things around for this football team. They've needed a legitimate top running back here, I think, for quite some time. And you think that Darius Geis can be that guy?
I do. I think he fell to them. He had some problems during the interview process with a couple of teams. How true this stuff is, who knows? But that's why he fell a little bit into the second round. Now they get a legitimate number one running back. Samaje Perine wasn't the answer. Chris Thompson, all right. Chris Thompson's a nice secondary back here. Rob Kelly, an okay back, average back. I think Darius Geis has a chance to be that guy. I'm not saying Ezekiel Elliott or David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley, not that type, but maybe the next tier. I think next year, when it comes to drafting, we'll be discussing that. Maybe he's an RB1. You know, that sort of the way, just outside of that, where this year he's a solid RB2. I can tell you he's a guy I seem to be ending up with in a lot of my live drafts. He's there in the end of round three. And I've been going for him. You know, I think he's going to be a good, solid running back there. You know, you just think about this. They're not going to want to throw the ball 40 times a game. That's not Alex Smith's game. That's not what he's good at. You know, even though I give him more credit than being a game manager, it's not a lot more than that. They're going to want him to control the game. You know, not throw the ball 40 times, run the ball, control the clock, because they have issues with their defense as well. So if they can run the ball, they can keep that defense off the field, which will be key. So I think Geis is going to have – I think he's going to get every opportunity here. I know people are going to be like, oh, Chris Thompson's there. Listen, there's a reason in fantasy drafts why we take those guys I mentioned early. And we want to throw Kamara in there, fine. Because they're the only running backs for that team. So they're going to get all the touches here. Most of these other teams, 25 other teams, don't have that. They're all going to have some kind of timeshare. Yes, Chris Thompson is going to be the GO of Vonnie Bernard, Duke Johnson, catch the balls on third down. He'll be valuable in fantasy as well later on. But most teams are like that. I'm not shying away from Darius Geis because Chris Thompson's there. Or shying away, you know, from other players for the same reason here. You know, most teams go with some kind of two running back system here. I want to avoid teams that have four running backs. Think of the Detroit Lions, New England Patriots, guys who have just way too many options there. With teams that have two, one's a pass catcher, one's the first and second down guy, as long as that first and second down guy, Darius Geis, is the touchdown guy, I'm good with it.
And I think that he will be. And I'm very high on Darius Geis. I think that he was someone that was done dirty within that draft process there. Remember, he was the guy that was talked about when there was the big question where they asked him some questionable stuff. It came out. I don't want to get big into conspiracies. I think that it was angled to kind of impact his draft stock. I think there was false information fed to reporters, and I think that it caused him to drop because all of the allegations, the team incident at LSU, all of this stuff never, ever came to fruition. So I don't worry about character at all with Darius Geis, and I think that the Redskins got the second-best running back in this draft class when they drafted Darius Geis. And I'm high on him. And I think that he could have a very, very good season. And you mentioned Chris Thompson being there, but Chris Thompson is coming off that injury. And I think that they're going to really put Chris Thompson in a role that's likely comparable to Theo Riddick, where the main focus is what he can do in the passing game. But I still think you're going to see Darius Geis be active in the passing game. Listen, this team is not going to hold back Geis. If Geis shows that he is ready to be a legitimate three-down running back, they're not going to say, whoa, that's not what we want. That's what they'd love to have. And if they can mix in a little Chris Thompson, that is great. But Geis is the one that they want to be their guy. Currently, by Fantasy Pros and PPR, Geis is the 17th running back off the board. The four guys going in front of him, 13, Jerick McKinnon, 14, Joe Mixon, 15, Jordan Howard, and 16, LeSean McCoy. Are you okay with all four of those guys being ahead of Geis, or would you move Geis up in front of some of those?
Joe Mixon, for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's easy for me. I'm not even close there. I'm not knocking Mixon. I don't trust Andy Dalton. Don't trust the passing offense, and I don't trust that offensive line. I know they've made some improvements, and I died with Joe Mixon last year because I had him on a few teams, but I'll take Geis over him every time. I mean, it's not even remotely close for me. You said LeSean McCoy. I mean, the problem with McCoy is this. We all know the allegations going on here, and maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but I can't play the maybe game right now. You know, if I'm drafting, I have to be very careful here. So if I draft McCoy, I now have to draft Ivory. No choice there. He has to come in, which also means I'm going to draft him earlier than I want to because someone else might be thinking, you know what, I'm going to draft Ivory in round 8. Maybe I got a starting running back here. You know, and the problem with McCoy also is, even if none of this ever came to light, man, the Buffalo Bills look bad. They just look bad. You know, this is a bad offense. They have no really pair. Kelvin Benjamin's your number one wide receiver. Charles Clay, I mean, these are okay guys with nothing great there. Who's throwing them the ball anyway? Teams are going to load up in the box to stop that running game. There's going to be 8 men on the line of scrimmage almost every down there, so I'm not liking that. No, I'm not going to be. I think I would take Geis over McCoy as well because of all these reasons. Only because McCoy, you're probably going to still draft in round 2 in 12 team and above leagues, the end of round 2, where Geis I can get a round later, and I'll feel better about that. So I don't think I'm going to want to spend that pick on McCoy, mainly because I got to get Ivory now in round 8, and it's just too much draft capital at one position for me. I'm not going to want to risk it.
Chris Thompson, currently the 35th. Running back off the board. He was really, really good last year when he was healthy, but then went down. I think that was week 11. It was that he ended up going down. So with Chris Thompson, I guess as an individual, do you like that value? And if you have Geis, do you feel more inclined to add Thompson to your roster?
No, because Thompson, he wouldn't be a handcuff, right? I mean, there are two different backs there. If, let's say, Geis gets hurt, I mean, then you're looking at Perrine and Kelly again. Yeah, you know, they'll get their chances there. It'll just be a nightmare. Thompson's a draft pick all on his own. I think the better question is, if you have Geis, would you still draft Thompson? You know, I probably don't like to do that. You know, once again, it's the same thing with drafting. Whoever you think is going to start in Cleveland, let's say Hyde and Duke Johnson, Giovanni Bernard and Joe Mixon. You know, a couple other teams that have the same thing here. I generally don't like to do that. I'm not a big handcuff guy in the first place. You know, in today's game, so many of these secondary guys, the Thompsons, Duke Johnsons, guys I keep mentioning, Giovanni Bernard, Tevin Coleman, they have value all on their own. They don't need an injury to have value. In today's NFL, there are no more Emmitt Smiths, Barry Sanders, all these guys who touch the ball 25 to 30 times a game. We don't do that anymore. You know, the game's too brutal. They don't do that. So those extra touches have to go to somebody, and it's these other guys who are catching the ball out of the backfield. Are they the touchdown guys? Well, really, no, they're not. I mean, they may run in a catch for 12-yard touchdown reception. Sure, that could happen, but it's not designed for it to be that way. So that's why it's tough to take them in the early rounds, but all have value round 7, 8, 9. Pretty much, let's face it, Kevin, any running back with a pulse has value.
Yeah. I think that's a fair point. Let's move over to the receiving core. Crowder, Doxson, and Richardson will make up their main three wide receivers with varying ADP positions there. But they don't have ADP positions. That's redundant. But varying ADPs, Crowder the highest of the bunch. Doxson and Richardson are close, but Doxson is still ahead of Richardson. Of those three, which is the one that you're most interested in? Maybe not necessarily the highest one, but you're most interested in of those three.
I mean, I think Doxson probably has the most talent of the three, but he just can't. You know, the guy who can't stay healthy. And he's, like I said, he's already banged up now. He looks like he'll be fine for the regular season, but he's already banged up. No, I'm going to stay away from him. Richardson, I mean, I'd probably much rather have him in a best ball.
Yeah.
You know, see if he has some big games here and there, but in a a redraft, counting on him game to game, no, probably can't do that. Once again, this is not a team that's going to throw the ball 40 times a game. I'll stick with Crowder. I think he's the safest play. I also think as far as value, his price is falling a little bit because a lot of fantasy owners are remembering last year when things didn't work out. And I said, I'm not paying a high price for him. He's certainly not a wide receiver 1 or 2. He's the wide receiver 3-4 range. And they can get him round 7, round 8. And I'll take that kind of value there. I think there is some upside that he could end up breaking out. You know, I wonder this. Is he Alex Smith's type of wide receiver? Someone who's going to be closer to the line of scrimmage. You know, he can get open, quick slants, quick pass patterns. So he's interesting to me as far. But that being said, I've died with this guy before. He's a guy I've seemed to always have on my teams. So I wonder if I'm going back to the well once too often here. Once again, looking for an excuse to put him on my teams. But as of right now, that's what I'm doing.
Jameson Crowder's ADP right now in PPR scoring is 37th. You can get Josh Doxson at 56th. And then you've got Paul Richardson at 61, and Paul Richardson is the one that does jump out to me. Perhaps, you know, maybe it's the new guy on the block, and that's why I'm interested in it. But I think that he's got a really good chance to be top three in targets. I think Crowder would be the front runner to lead them in targets there. I think the running backs, it can kind of be split a little bit, and you mentioned Doxson's health, but he seems a little bit more like a big play type of guy. And again, just Jordan Reed, I just can't trust that. So I think Paul Richardson interests me, especially with the value that you get with Paul Richardson. Again, 61st wide receiver there. I think that he actually could be pretty good within this offense. I mean, look, 61, there's value there for Paul Richardson. But if you maybe look at some of the guys that he's grouped up with, the guys that are going right behind him, Mohamed Sanu, Courtland Sutton, and Anthony Miller, right in front of him, Christian Kirk, DeSean Jackson, Michael Gallup, and Rashad Matthews. Of all of those names there, I think Paul Richardson is probably the one that I would be most interested in.
Yeah, I just don't know if I'm going to trust Richardson here. Because I got to trust Richardson and Alex Smith. That's a lot to ask for here. Mm. Couldn't really make it work all that great with Russell Wilson, who's a better quarterback, and gave him extra time to get open because of all the scrambling he'd do. Now, maybe there wasn't chemistry there for whatever reason, didn't work out, whatever. I also wonder this. Is Richardson's main job to run those deep patterns and get rid of the safety? You know, more for the underneath stuff, once again, more for Darius Geis' running room, make sure there's no 8 men in the box. Yeah, we see that over and over again, that sometimes that's the receiver's job. Run those deep routes and take people with you. So I'm going to have a tough time trusting him anything but a best ball. I don't see myself having too many shares of Richardson unless I'm playing in double-digit leagues, which probably will happen, where I might take a shot on him in one or two leagues. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I don't know if I'm seeing big things here. I wish he went to a different kind of offense.
Before we get to the tight ends, the outlook for the defense, they're putting a lot of some Alabama defensive linemen in Jonathan Allen. Hopefully for them, they're hoping to have a breakout year two. They took De'Aaron Payne at 13 in this past draft. They really could use Josh Norman to stay healthy, but I still wonder if what we got from him in Carolina is just a level that we're never going to see him get back to. Your outlook for this defense, how much would it worry you perhaps if your opposing quarterback were going up against a Redskins defense?
Not much. I mean, I think what you said about Josh Norman is probably correct. You know, I think that he had his best year with Carolina. It's never going to happen again. Maybe the Carolina GM got him and was right then when he got let him go. Safeties are okay. They picked up Skandrick on the Cowboys. Once again, okay. Better nickel corner than an outside corner. So, I mean, Norman's going to line up against the number one. I wonder if, will this be the year where they finally let Norman follow the guy all around? Mm. You know, in my mind, you're paying a cornerback that kind of money. If he can't follow the guy left and right, then I'm not paying him that kind of money.
Yeah,
it's really that simple. I understand there's more to it than that. It's not always on that cornerback. Sometimes the other cornerback, well, he can't play the other side. You know, so you got to keep them where they are. But I think you got to realize that before you pay the money then. Then maybe you shouldn't be doing that. You know, that's just the way I look at things. If I'm paying a cornerback that much money, he has to follow the number one. You know, I want him on, well, it's not going to be Dez Bryant anymore, and I will. But I want him, I certainly want him on Odell Beckham because I want to watch the show. Those two guys don't like each other. You know, I want him following Beckham all over the place. You know, I understand this year in Cowboys, Allen Hurns, who cares? You know, even the Eagles, they have a smorgasbord of wide receivers there. Maybe it's Alshon Jeffrey, but I want him following the number one guy. It's really that simple. It's just, it's that simple. But the question with every defense, can you get pressure on the cornerback, on the quarterback? You mentioned Jonathan Allen. A lot of it's on him. You know, he's got to do it. Can he get, it's a 3-4 defense. Can he get that pressure? Can Ryan Kerrigan, you know, can Allen, I guess, free up Kerrigan to get there as well? If they can get there, I think the defense is good. I don't think it's great by any means, but I don't think it's terrible. It's somewhere in the middle. But if they can get to the quarterback, I think they can make life interesting.
Tight end situation will be fluid for this team, I guess, in just terms of how we view it. Jordan Reed, if you told me you were getting 16 games, he likely enters that top five, maybe even the top three, almost immediately. You can't promise that to anybody. Just not with what we have seen from him in these past years. He's currently the ninth tight end on Fantasy Pros. Last year was 27 catches, 200 yards, and 2 touchdowns and played 6 games. He's never played 16 in his career, 14 in 2015, and he played 12 in 2016. Again, just the 6 games last season. I know he feels confident about it. George, are you ending up with Jordan Reed on any of your fantasy teams this year?
If you were to tell me that Jordan Reed was going to play 14 full games, that means he's not leading at the first quarter. The only tight end I would have above him is Rob Gronkowski.
Wow.
He is that good. He's the only one. He's easy top three for me. But the problem is you can't tell me he's going to play 14 games. Yeah. You can't tell me he's going to play 6 games. We just don't know. We just don't. And the problem with Reed is this. It's not like, you know, okay, I'll just draft Vernon Davis, who's very good in his own right, and I'll be covered. No, it doesn't work that way. Because the problem with Reed is, oh, he's questionable, but he plays, but he comes out in the first quarter. So you started him anyway. You couldn't even start Vernon Davis in his play. It's not like he's inactive. He's always seems to be questionable, always seems to come out after a quarter. And that's the issue there. Because, like I said, if I knew, I'll just draft Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis. I'll get one of the Washington tight ends. I'm good. It doesn't work that way. Now you have to draft Jordan Reed and a tight end from another team.
Yeah.
And then make that decision at 11:30 on Sundays. You know, okay, Reed's questionable. He's probably going to play. Do I start Reed, who has a great matchup, who I love, or do I start O.J. Howard?
Yeah.
And that's the issue for me there. That's where the problem comes in. I'd rather avoid the situation and just grab another tight end I like better.
It's a risk. It's a headache. If it ends up hitting, you get a steal. But I'm with George. I don't know if I want to sign up for that headache. We come back here, Fantasy Sports Today. Emory Hunt from Giants Training Camp will join us. Keep it here